Krishnaya Vishakpururaji Mandalaya. Abhyana na pula drisho vicharak bahak. Saho pavista vipane virejush. Chadayatam po ruhu karnikaya. Krishna shavishak pururaji mandalaya. Abhyana na pula drisho vijarvaka. Saho pavishta vipine virejush. Chadayatam pohuraha karnikaya. Krishna shavishak pururaji mandalaya. Abhyana na pula drisho vicharbaka. Saho pavishta vipane virejush. Chadayatam pohuraha karnikaya. Sakura Pujakara Mandalaya.
Abhyana na pula drisho vicharbaka. Saho pavishta vipane virejush. Chadayatam pohuraha karnikaya.
Ladies? Any one lady? Krishna Shavishak, surrounding Krishna. Pururaji Mandalai, by different encirclements of associates. Abhyanana, everyone looking forward. To the center, where Krishna was sitting. Puladrishaha, their face is looking very bright because of transcendental pleasure. Vraja Arbaka, all the cowherd boys of Vrajabhumi. Saha Upavishtaha, sitting with Krishna. Vipane, in the forest. Vireju, so nicely and beautifully made. Chada, petals and leaves. Yata, just as. Umbruruha, of a lotus flower. Karnikaya
of the world.
Translation. Like the whorl of a lotus flower, surrounded by its petals and leaves, Krishna sat in the center, encircled by lines of his friends who all looked very beautiful. Every one of them was trying to look forward toward Krishna, thinking that Krishna might look toward him. In this way, they all enjoyed their lunch in the forest. Do you read that and have people repeat it? No. Okay. Okay, purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is, everyone please listen very carefully, because this is, actually this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam was the very last chapter that Srila Prabhupada translated and commented on. And you can see the films of him translating this. He was lying in his bed, just speaking his last words. This was his very last days. And he could almost not even move. But his disciples, loving disciples, were all surrounding him. And they were holding the microphone to his mouth. And these are the words that he was speaking. He says this. To a pure devotee, Krishna is always visible. As stated in Brahma Samhita, Santa Sadaiva Hridayeshu Velokayanti. Meaning, this is from the beautiful text, the Brahma Samhita, saying that for the santa, for the pure devotees, they are always seeing the Lord, seeing Lord Krishna within their hearts. To a pure devotee, Krishna is always visible, as stated in Brahma Samhita, santa sadaiva hridayeshu valokayanti. And as indicated by Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, I'm sorry, I'm just going to stop for one second and just ask if everyone could please be quiet. If everyone could please stop talking so that we can all have our consciousness focused on the Bhagavatam. Thank you. To a pure devotee, Krishna is always visible as stated in Brahma Samhita, Santa Sadaiva Hridayeshu Valokayanti. And as indicated by Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvata Pani Padam Tat Sarvatok Shikshiro Mukham. Meaning that his hands are everywhere, his legs are everywhere, his eyes are everywhere, his arms are everywhere, his face is everywhere. If by accumulating pious activities, Krita Punya Punja, one is raised to the platform of pure devotional service, Krishna is always visible in the core of one's heart. One who has attained such a perfection is all beautiful in transcendental bliss. The present Krishna consciousness movement is an attempt to keep Krishna in the center. For if this is done, all activities will automatically become beautiful and blissful. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Prijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpa Taruvyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Like the whorl of a lotus flower surrounded by its petals and leaves, Krishna sat in the center, encircled by lines of his friends who all looked very beautiful. Every one of them was trying to look forward toward Krishna, thinking that Krishna might look toward him. In this way, they all enjoyed their lunch in the forest. So before I begin, I just would like to say a couple things. One is that today is the divine appearance day of Sri Advaita Acharya. And so certainly that's a topic that deserves to be spoken upon. I was asked to speak on the theme of flowers. And so I will do that, and perhaps some of our more qualified speakers later today will tie in the subject of Srila Advaita Acharya. And speaking of more qualified speakers, you know, normally on this day, so many years we've come and we sat here on this day and we've heard from Srila Radhanath Swami speak to inaugurate this flower festival. And of course, he couldn't be here today. There's certainly many others. So within this ashram here alone, there's so many other speakers who are so much more qualified than myself. But they've asked me to speak. So remembering Srila Radhanath Swami and praying for his grace and for the grace of all the Vaishnavas here, I will try to share a little something on Bhagavatam. So this is a beautiful verse. It's describing Lord Krishna with his friends, the cowherd boys. Every day they leave home. They wander off into the forest, and they're surrounded by the cows and the calves. And as they run through the forest, they're enjoying each other's association. They're playing games. They're playing with the cows. And at a certain point in the day, they all become a little bit tired and they sit down by the bank of the river and they take their snacks, have a little lunch, and they sit down in a certain pattern. And that pattern is being described in this verse. It's a pattern that's natural. It's a pattern that doesn't require any planning. It happens naturally because they're all moving through this world in a very natural way. And what's very natural about it is that there's Krishna. And what does the name Krishna mean? The all-attractive one. So when Krishna sits, then like a magnet, everyone comes right around him, right? And they naturally fall into a very beautiful pattern, a pattern that's being described here like the flower with Krishna in the center. You know, anywhere in the world, practically every I assume every single culture in the world has an appreciation for the flower, right? Like we see them practically in ornamentation, like in so practically everywhere we see that design of a flower. Right? I believe right in the center of the floor here, it's designed like a flower, right? Why is that? You know, perhaps there's something to it that underneath all of our conditioning, underneath all the programming that we have in the mind, there is some feeling of some very natural feeling that makes us happy when we see the center and symmetrically it's surrounded, right, in a very nice pattern like a flower. We just look at that symbol, something deep within us feels good because it's representing what is pure and natural and beautiful. Right. These boys here, there's some important things, really. It's a simple verse, but like every other verse in Bhagavatam, it's full of meaning. Sometimes when I read Bhagavatam, I like to think about Srila Vyasadeva, this beautiful sage sitting up in the forest or up in the mountains, up in the Himalaya mountains, and a pure-hearted sage, right? And he's writing each one of these verses, so many verses, you know, just in Bhagavatam alone, so many verses. And particularly when he was writing Bhagavatam, he had a special mission He was given that mission by his guru, who basically, if you look at the message that Narada gave to Vyasadeva, he said, you've written so many excellent books. Vyasadeva was saying to his guru, you know, I've done a lot of service. I've tried to do my service well, but still deep down inside my heart, I feel a little despondent. I don't feel quite right. I don't know what it is. I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. And Narada said to him, more or less what he said to him is that you've written excellent books. You've written the four Vedas. These are important books to show people how to live a pious life. But really, it's a pious materialistic life. It's a step forward for so many people, for most people even. So that's a valuable book. And then you wrote the Upanishads, which taught something deeper. These books taught how to let go of our material attachments. Rather than cultivate our material attachments in a pious way, we can do more, we can understand more, we can transcend, we can understand, I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, aham brahmasmi, I am the soul within, and that there's really nothing of this external world that gives us the true, deep happiness that every living being is searching for. So let go of the things of this world. Right? So these are important books. And you've also written a very special book called Mahabharata. You know, in that book, the Bhagavad Gita is there, and Krishna's instructions are there, and they begin to point to the highest thing. They begin to point to bhakti, that it's ultimately through bhakti that one finds their completion. Right? And then he wrote all the Puranas, as well as Vedanta Sutra. He had written so many important books, but still he had not, you could say, put Krishna right in the center. Right? Still that wasn't, and because that wasn't there, things didn't feel quite right. Until Krishna is placed right in the center, right in the place of prominence, things don't feel quite right. This is how, there's meaning in everything in the bhakti culture. If we look forward to the front of the temple, we see right in the center, Radha and Krishna. Right? And then that's the place where we have the most beautiful symmetric ornamentation going on. Because it's designed in a way that our attention goes right to that point. And when our attention goes right to that point, naturally, we feel beautiful, we feel peaceful, we feel happy. So it's describing that these boys, they didn't need a temple, they didn't to put Krishna in the center. That helps us, but by naturally, they're always attracted to have Krishna in the center. When Krishna sat down, naturally they formed this beautiful symmetrical pattern right around him. And not only that, but this is very significant. It mentions that they were all facing him. Let's look into the Sanskrit here. It says, Krishnasya Vishak, surrounding Krishna. Puru Raja Mandalai. This is a mandala. They naturally formed a mandala. Right? People, they design these mandalas. You look at them and you feel they affect your mind. They affect you in a particular way. They make you feel a particular way. The symmetrical pattern. They sat down naturally in a mandala surrounding Krishna. And then it says, Abhyananaha, everyone looking forward to the center where Krishna was sitting. Right? They weren't distracted. They weren't sitting in the circle but looking the other way. You're all sitting in circle right now. Imagine if everyone turned around and looked away. It wouldn't be quite the same. They're all looking and they're looking at Krishna. And then it says that, and because they're, this next part is really important. Everybody ready? They're all looking at Krishna. But what's the effect of that? What's the effect of looking at Krishna? What's the effect of putting Krishna in the center and facing him? And then it uses this term. It says, Pula Drishaha. Right? Pula Drishaha. The word Pula, this is a word that it's like a term that's applied very much to flowers, right? But it refers to the full blossoming of the flower. Am I right about this, Nityananda Prabhu? You're a Sanskrit expert. Yes? Any enlightenment that you can share on this, I want to hear. Nityananda Prabhu is my friend, and he knows these things much better than me. But, there's a flower. We can watch it grow. Sometimes you watch time-lapse photography, and you see the flower grow out of the ground, and you see the stem start to grow, and it starts to sprout in a little bit, and then you got like the bud of the flower, and then it's there. You see it; it's kind of like all bound tightly. And then it begins to open and open and open and open and open. And when it's fully open, then we feel a sense of satisfaction. Like, right? It's just open. And its full beauty is expressed when it's fully open, when it's fully blossomed. This is what this word here, pula, means. Pula drisho. And drisho refers to, it's a vision, right? Like drista. You could see, it was a vision of complete blossoming. Their faces, it's describing. Because they're surrounding Krishna, because Krishna is in the center, and because they're facing Krishna, naturally their faces blossom like a beautiful flower, and they appear very beautiful, right? This is Srila Vyasadeva was sitting up there, Bhadika Ashrama, writing verses with a mission from his guru. Put Krishna in the center of your literature so everybody knows exactly where to look. So make it crystal clear. So he went back to Srimad Bhagavatam, he re-edited it, he revised it, and he put the 10th canto in there that had Krishna's entire life. So we could hear about Krishna's pastimes and see how those great souls who are not under illusion, who are not confused by the movements of this material world, how they relate to Krishna. And when he sits down to write this very poetic verse about the cowherd boys and Krishna, it's not just like an incidental like verse that's saying, well, okay, they went here, then they sat down, then they did this, then they did that. Everything in it has meaning, right? And the meaning here is that when we put Krishna in the center and when we turn ourselves toward Krishna, then naturally life becomes very beautiful. Naturally we feel very happy. And as a soul, we fully open up. We fully blossom. Everything that's beautiful within us opens up and comes out when we face towards Krishna. This is his message. This is what he's trying to tell us. Very nice, yeah? Everybody likes flowers. You know, they're so beautiful, they're so sweet. They all have that pattern, right? That pattern is natural to us. It's deep within us. All we have to do is listen. All we have to do is watch a little bit. And the clues of how we're meant to live are all over nature, right? We can hear it straight from the pristine words of the soft-hearted, kind, deeply enlightened, deeply realized sage. And then we can see those clues in nature everywhere that we look. And therefore, we find these flowers everywhere, all throughout the Shastra, wherever it's speaking about Krishna, especially lotus feet, lotus eyes, lotus navel, lotus this, lotus that. Always the flowers there, right? It's a beautiful, beautiful representation. It's there to help us understand. Now, these boys were all facing Krishna, and the result was that their faces opened up, they were bright, they were shiny, they were beautiful. Yesterday I had this experience, we're just driving through Mumbai. You know, I'm from New York, which is something a lot like Mumbai. And I know how these cities work. And the way that these cities work is they're very good at making us turn away from Krishna. They're saying, look at this, and we turn away from Krishna. Look at that, turn your face away from Krishna. Right? What should be natural to us, what is natural underneath, the mind gets all cloudy and we become convinced that I might be able to find some happiness not looking at Krishna, but looking at this. Or maybe there's some happiness looking at that. Oh, I didn't become happy looking at that. I actually feel kind of miserable. Let me try looking over here. Let me look in that direction. Let me look in this direction. Let me look in that direction. We were driving through Mumbai and I saw one lady. We're in a car and we're waiting at a corner about to turn. And there was a lady standing on the corner and she was waiting for her opportunity to cross the street. And I looked into her face. And her face was so hardened. I looked deep into that face. I tried to understand who she was, what she was feeling, what her life was like. And I know how hard these cities are. I know how brutal they can be. And I looked deep into her face and I said, that looks to me like a face that smiles very rarely. And, you know, that's the world that we've created by turning away from Krishna. Now, Krishna gives some very interesting instructions on this as well in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the form of Sri Chaitanya speaking to another great sage, Srila Sanatana Goswami. Right? There's a beautiful narration in this book. This book is so valuable to read. And within this book, that gives it gives the story of Sri Chaitanya's life, but within it, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj has placed certain conversations that he had that were particularly important. Right? There's a very important conversation he has with the guru in Jagannath Puri, the brilliant scholar, the renowned scholar, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And then when he travels to South India, he has a very important conversation with Ramananda Roy, great, deepest, esoteric bhakti yogi. Then later on, he has super important conversation with Prakashananda Saraswati. And then he also has very important conversations with our own acharyas, with our own great teachers, with his own followers in the forms of Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. And the conversation that he has with Sanatana Goswami is so important. Sanatana Goswami was raised in the highest brahminical family, but he was kind of coerced by Nawab Hussein Shah, the Muslim leader at the time of Bengal. He was coerced into the service of the Muslim government. And because he was such a brilliant man, because he was so capable in managing, he was given these responsibilities. But deep within, he wanted nothing more than to run away to Vrindavan and worship Krishna, to run away and find Sri Chaitanya and surrender his life. And so after years of service in that government, he managed to escape. He was imprisoned. He escaped from prison. Then he managed he went to Varanasi and he was seeking out Sri Chaitanya. And when he got there, he finally saw Sri Chaitanya. He felt the deepest bliss in finally gazing upon him. And he approached Sri Chaitanya with the greatest humility. He says, even though people consider me to be a great man, they consider me to be this big, important leader. He says, I really have no idea what I'm doing in life. I don't have a clue. He said, could you please tell me, who am I? Really, who am I? Not this particular name, not this particular role I play in life, not this body, not even this mind, but underneath it all, who am I? And why do I suffer in this world? Right. And Sri Chaitanya began to speak to him. Right? He began by saying, Jivara Swarupa Hoya, Krishnara Nitya Dasa. Right? That every living being, every soul by nature is Krishna's servant. This is who we are underneath it all. Right? He said, but we are the marginal energy of Krishna. So sometimes we are facing Krishna and we're feeling that internal, deep, beautiful spiritual nature. We are Krishna's energy itself. We feel that Sat Chit Ananda. We feel that bliss that is natural for us. And he said, sometimes we're turned away from Krishna. We become covered by his external energy. We become forgetful. We lose touch with that nature. Right? And then to give an example of who we are, he gives the example of a ray of sunlight, right? Because a ray of sunlight, it has the same, it's made of the same exact energy as the sun, right? If the sun is bright, the sunlight is bright. The sun is hot, the sunlight is hot, right? It's got brightness, it's got heat because it is made of the sun. At the same time, it's separate from the sun, right? It's dependent on the sun. The sun is not dependent on it. So Sri Chaitanya uses this as an example to help Sanatana Goswami understand this is the nature of the self, right? We are made of Krishna's energy. We're non-different from Krishna. And at the same time, we have the free will we can turn away. And then he goes on, he gives many, many, many verses in this chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita. But I wanted to read one verse where he describes this in detail. This is in the Bengali. Krishna Bhuli Sejiva Anadi Bahirmuka Ateva Mayatare Deya Sangsara Dukha. Forgetting Krishna, the living entity has been attracted by the external feature from time immemorial. Therefore, the illusory energy, Maya, gives him all kinds of misery in his material existence. So this is when one's... Actually, he literally says here, he uses the term Bahir Mukaha. So here Mukaha means, who can say? Face, right? Mukha means face, and Bahir, that means the outside, the external. It's turned not in, but it's turned out. So when we saw the cowherd boys, they were all faced, they were in a circle and they were all facing in. They had their face looking at Krishna. And naturally their face became bright and blossomed like a beautiful flower. They felt ecstasy. They are made of Krishna's energy. And they are reconnected. By turning to Krishna, they are reconnected with their own original source of energy. But when we turn away, when the face turns away, Bahir Mukha, when it faces outside, then he says, then we feel all kinds of miseries. This is what Srila Prabhupada writes in the commentary to this verse. I'll read. Everybody ready? With me? Okay. When the living entity forgets their constitutional position as an eternal servant of Krishna, then they are immediately entrapped by the illusory energy, the external energy. The living entity is originally part and parcel of Krishna and is therefore the superior energy of Krishna. He is endowed with inconceivable, minute energy that works inconceivably within the body. Now, everybody hear that. Okay, this is talking about all of us, that we are all endowed with inconceivable energy. It's within us all. And that energy works inconceivably within our own body, right? The power of the soul we can't even estimate. This is, we are made of the very energy of God. He is endowed with inconceivable minute energy that works inconceivably within the body. However, the living entity forgetting his original position is situated in material energy. The living entity is called the marginal energy because by nature he is spiritual, but by forgetfulness he is situated in the material energy. Thus he has the power to live either in the material energy or in the spiritual energy, and for this reason he is called marginal energy, right? Right in the margin. We can go either way. Being in the marginal position, he is sometimes attracted by the external illusory energy, and this is the beginning of his material life. When he enters the material energy, he is subjected to the threefold time measurements, past, present, and future. Past, present, and future belong only to the material world. They do not exist in the spiritual world. The living entity is eternal, and he existed before the creation of this material world. Unfortunately, he has forgotten his relationship with Krishna. The living entity's forgetfulness is described herein as anadi, which indicates that it has existed since time immemorial. One should understand that due to his desire to enjoy himself in competition with Krishna, the living entity comes into material existence. Okay, so here's the message. Here's what Sri Chaitanya says to Sadhana Goswami. Why do we suffer in this material world? It's very simple, right? We don't need to. It's just that we've chosen something, that we've turned our face from Krishna. We've turned it towards the material energy, and we've done it a long time ago, many, many lifetimes ago, so many lifetimes ago that we can't even remember what it was. But there's a very simple formula. Just turn back, right? Just turn back and face Krishna. But then if it's so simple, then why don't we just do it? And why don't we experience that bliss all the time? And it's because our mind has become programmed so deeply with a false idea. Within our minds, through our eyes, through our ears, through our senses, so many messages have been sent to us programming our mind to believe that we can find happiness through external things. When all along that happiness is deep within us, and when we turn to Krishna, we feel it. As a matter of fact, All we have to do is to turn within to see Krishna. He's there within the heart of every living being, right? So what we're doing today, it's a ritual, right? It's a ritual that's specifically designed to achieve something. Any ritual in yoga, right? Whatever we're doing in the yoga culture, in the bhakti culture, if someone asks, why are they doing that? Why are they all sitting around with baskets in the middle of them, plucking flowers, plucking petals off of the flowers and collecting them in big baskets? What is the point to this activity? In any ritual that we do in bhakti, the point is always the same. It's to bring the mind to the center. It's to train our mind to return to the center. It's to train our mind to return to Krishna in the center with the types of sentiments that are based in truth and that will give us relief from all of our suffering in life. Right? So in the temple here, as I mentioned earlier, what do we have? Dead center, Radha and Krishna. That's where our consciousness is meant to flow. So architecturally it's designed in just such a way where it becomes very clear where the mind is meant to flow. And then what are we doing here? We have flowers. And these flowers are collected from so many different places all over India. Some of them are coming from Vrindavan. Some of them are coming from, I don't even know where they're all coming from. They're coming from so many different places. Collecting beautiful flowers from all these different places. We brought them here. And everyone together, we all come together centered around Krishna. Right? We all have different, we all come from different walks of life. We're different genders. We're different races. We come from different countries, different nationalities. We have different duties in life. Some of us are wealthy. Some of us are not so wealthy. Some of us are big and strong. Some of us are skinny and weak. Some of us, we're all different sizes and shapes and coming from different backgrounds, but we're all facing the center together. Right? And when we face the center together, it creates that symmetry that becomes natural and becomes pleasing. It becomes pleasing to Krishna, it becomes pleasing to us, and then our faces light up like a blossom flower. So we pick these flowers, and it's saying that everything should go towards the center. These flowers are grown all over. If we were able to like have some kind of like map of India, and we could point out where all the different flowers came from, we would see that they all started to come right to this point, right? Some came from here, and some came from there, and then they all came and they gathered right here at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. And by plucking them today, we've all decided that we will take those flowers, and rather than try to enjoy them ourselves, we're going to make them an offering to Radha and Krishna. Right? So we pluck them and we pluck them and pluck them. And then this evening we'll sit here and we're going to do something very simple. It's not at all complicated. It's about the simplest thing you can do. That all these flowers will just be dropped over the top of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. We're going to watch it. And when we watch it happen, we're going to start to feel really good inside. Right? It's as simple as that. Nothing is so complicated. If we just make our lives a simple offering to Radha and Krishna, then naturally we blossom ourselves, we light up. We'll watch them drop all these flowers and we'll sing the names of Krishna. And that's it. That's all we need to come together. That's all we need to live peacefully together. That's all we need to be happy together, is just placing Krishna in the center. And then at a certain point, they'll gather all these flowers and we'll have the chance to throw them at each other. It shouldn't be such a like an ecstatic thing, but somehow when we're doing it, we feel the greatest happiness. I've seen this happen many times. It happens everywhere. It works every time. Right? I guarantee you, right, that in that moment, we will all be feeling a deep sense of ecstasy, but a sense of ecstasy that's not separated from Krishna. A sense of bliss that's derived by facing Krishna. And therefore, it's something you can do over and over and over and over again. And you derive that same bliss over and over and over again. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't get spent, right? Like a piece of chewing gum that you've been chewing on for a while and it's got no more flavor in it and it's useless for you. It's just wearing out your jaw now. That's what happens when we're searching for material happiness. Right? It may give us a thrill, it may have some flavor, and then it goes away, and then we get that hardened face. Right? Again. Right. So, this is a ritual. Right? Rituals are designed in a particular way for a particular purpose to bring our mind in a particular place. And this ritual is perfectly designed to bring our mind towards Lord Krishna. Together we'll feel that ecstasy. Together we'll feel that joy. And hopefully every one of us walks away with a deep impression in the mind. This is the idea behind the ritual. It makes a samskara, right? It makes an impression that stays with us. Maybe we do it once and it's in there in a little bit and then we forget it. But we do it twice. We do it three times. We do it steadily. We do it every day, right? These rituals that we do in bhakti and these practices that we do in bhakti. Shravanam, hearing the Bhagavatam, right? Kirtanam, chanting Krishna's beautiful names, right? Smaranam, remembering Krishna. Archanam. Archanam is what we'll be doing now, what we are doing now and what we'll be doing this evening. It means realizing that there is a power in, through following this ancient tradition, creating forms like the forms of Krishna, then calling Krishna to reside in that form, and then and because that form has such beauty, right? And because it's so natural within our heart to be attracted to that form, our senses can become focused on that form. We can bring our eyes there, right? By looking at Krishna's form and the beautiful flowers that are bathing that form. And we can get our ears involved, right? By hearing Krishna's names. We can get our voice involved by chanting Krishna's names. We can feel those vibrations moving through our entire bodies, right? And if we do these kind of activities on a daily basis, we do them regularly, we do them with the right conceptions, as Sanatana Goswami was hearing, that I'm the spark of Krishna's energy, right? I'm conscious by nature. I'm eternal by nature, but I'm dependent on my original source. We go into it with the right conceptions and the right sentiments, then naturally that divine happiness will arise in us. Naturally that feeling of connection to Krishna, that always being connected, right? Nitya yukta, right? Satatam, always being connected to Krishna will rise in us and we'll move through this world with a totally different set of eyes. We'll move through this world feeling something that we may not feel steadily right now, but we will feel it, that steady connection to Krishna, right? So tonight, as we're going through this, let us remember that purpose. The more clearly that you remember the purpose of the ritual, the deeper the effect of the ritual goes into our minds, goes into our hearts. Right? So I thank you all for coming. In one sense, I feel like I'm a person that's a guest here. And so I shouldn't be welcoming anyone. But in another sense, you know, Raghunath and myself, we've been coming to Radha Gopinath's temple and to see Radha Gopinath and all of their devotees now since about, I guess it's been 30 years? For about 30 years, we've been coming here. Usually every year we try to come. So the place feels like home and the devotees feel like family. And so, you know, on behalf of myself and Raghunath, I could say, you know, thank you for always welcoming us here. On behalf of everyone from the groups that we brought here, I want to say thank you for welcoming us in such a beautiful way. That there was a time when this festival was like a kind of a local festival. And gradually you just opened it up to us and we enjoyed it so much. And you all encouraged us to bring more and more people until it's kind of like so many of us filling up the temple room during the festival. But and many of you sacrificed not being up close. That means so much to us to be able to give us this special experience. So we thank you so much. I want to thank Srila Radhanath Swami, the person that conceived of this beautiful festival. He's not here with us, but, you know, Raghunath and I, we also had an experience recently where we hadn't seen Radhanath Swami for so long because of COVID. Normally we're with him many times throughout the year, and he's very kind with his time with us, and we get to sit with him and be with him and hear from him. And we had the opportunity to see him after years, and we're sitting down with him, and he was right in front of us. And we said, Maharaj, it's so wonderful to have you here with us. It's been so long since we've seen you. But at the same time, it almost feels like no time has passed because we're always thinking of you. You know, it's like because we're thinking of you, we always feel your presence in our life. So although we haven't seen you, so it kind of feels like we've been with you all along. You know, And that's the nature of bhakti too. So although Maharaj isn't here today, I think we'll all feel him here today. Right? Perhaps you feel him here now and we can think of him and call upon his presence to be here with us. So I thank you all so much for plucking and for listening. Should I take questions? Do we take questions? And we have some time if anyone would like to ask any questions or share any thoughts. If everyone could please be very quiet so we can hear the questions. Oh, Mike is coming for you. There we go. Mike is on the way.
Hare Krishna. Okay. Hare Krishna Kusuma Prabhu. Thank you for the really wonderful and inspiring class.
Thank you.
In the purport, Srila Prabhupada said that through pious activities, one can come to bhakti. But my understanding is that only bhakti can come from bhakti. So please, can you comment on that?
Okay, that's a very interesting question. I noted that myself. I want to find it. Okay, yeah, here we are. Oh, here we go. So Srila Prabhupada writes, if by accumulating pious activities, and then he quotes a phrase, and this it's krita punya punjaha, krita punya punjaha. This means this, it's talking about punya, which means like some kind of credit. And generally when we use this word punya, we're referring to like going back, we're talking about the four Vedas earlier. The idea that through through cultivating good karma, by being kind, by being generous, by following the rituals that are in the Vedas so that we are expressing our gratitude for everything that we receive in life. Through this, you can accumulate good credit, punya. And that punya is almost like money in the bank that can be spent to receive material blessings in life. Now, this phrase here, kritya punya punja, is speaking about the cowherd boys. I believe it's in the previous chapter. Perhaps it's earlier in this chapter. But it speaks about the cowherd boys that they had, what a blessing they had. They had the blessing to play with Krishna, to run with Krishna, to dance with Krishna, to sing with Krishna, to sit down and eat with Krishna, to sit in a circle with Krishna and always be facing Krishna. They had the deepest love in the mood of friendship. How did they get that? Why them and not all of us? Why are they there and we're not there? Because they had accumulated all of this punya. Right? But the punya that they had is not this kind of punya. What they had accumulated wasn't anything material. It wasn't the kind of punya that's like in a bank. We get money in a bank and then we go and we spend it for something and we get something. Whatever it is that we try to enjoy, it runs out and then it's gone. Right? This isn't like the punya that you get from the Vedas by living a holy life and living a pious life. And in your next birth, you go up to the heavenly planets and you enjoy pleasures that you didn't even know existed in this world. But then the punya runs down and you come back down. This type of punya is that conception doesn't apply here at all. This is by turning towards Krishna, by giving their heart to Krishna. All right, they've been blessed in this way. And they have heaps and heaps and heaps of this. But this is something that doesn't go away. It doesn't get spent. So this is the type of blessing one gets when one gives their heart to Krishna without desiring anything else. So the term is the same. It's almost like sometimes we'll say like the desire, the kama that the gopis have for Krishna. It's not the kama of this world because their love is entirely selfless. This isn't the punya of the material world. This is a punya that's also entirely selfless. We've got another question.
Hare Krishna. Kasturi, can I ask one more question
while
I have the mic?
You, okay. It's okay with me.
Thank you. Thank you for that
answer. We can keep asking until all the flowers are plucked.
I'm wondering, what are the Gopas' relationships, what are the Gopas' relationships with each other? Because yes, Krishna's in the center, but I'm wondering, like more applied to us, like how should we relate to each other while keeping Krishna or even the Guru in the center?
Yeah. Well, the Gopas or the cowherd boys, they are on the transcendental platform. They are living out the culture that's the natural Vedic culture. In other words, when they see their elders, they show respect. They bow down. They touch the feet. Before they run off to be with Krishna in the morning, they bow down. They touch their parents' feet. They touch it to the head. They have that respect. Love. Right? They have that love for Krishna. So when they bow down, they're bowing down to their parents who also love Krishna. Right? When they run out with their friends, the friends they treat like equals, even Krishna, because Krishna is their friend. So with there, they love each other as equals. It means that the formalities that even they show their parents aren't there with their friends. They're running around, they're playing. And we've all heard, you know, the descriptions. Sometimes they're playing with Krishna. Sometimes they defeat Krishna. Sometimes they say, Krishna, I beat you, and now you have to carry me on your back. Right? That's their intimate love, right? And if there's a younger cowherd boy, then they're looking out for him, you know, like an older brother, like with that kind of a special type of friendship. There's many different types of gopis and gopas. They have different flavors, different relationships with Krishna and with the others, with their other friends. So it's unique. You can put them in certain categories, but even within those categories, every gopa has a unique love for Krishna and a unique love for every living being, unique love for the cows also, right? Yeah. Thank you. They protect the cows, you know, that's another mood that they have, another mood of love. So many moods of love are there. We have one question over here, maybe we could take this one next. Sir.
Pranam.
It's on.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu.
My question is relating to Kapil Muni.
Relating to?
Kapil Muni.
Kapila Muni.
Third canto.
Oh, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to answer this, but I'll try.
There were two Kapil Muni. One was false and then Devuti and then
yes.
Karda Muni and Devuti. So what the Kapil Muni, what he described and what have to come as real Kapil Muni, what is the difference been opinion of that do both Kapila Muni?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question. The Kapila Muni, what is the difference between?
Kapila Muni, Karda Muni. God come as a son of Karda Muni.
Yes.
Kapila Muni, in the third canto. There were two Kapila Muni, one was false.
Okay, you're asking what is the difference between the two Kapilas?
So what is the opinion, difference in opinion, both of opinion?
Okay.
What does first describe and another what does describe?
Are you asking what is the difference between the two Kapila Munis?
Huh.
Okay. So there's a Kapila Muni in Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the original Kapila. This is Krishna himself incarnating as the son of Devahuti. And he teaches Samkhya. He actually teaches all the different yogas there in the third canto, right? He teaches Samkhya, he teaches Ashtanga, he teaches Bhakti. He teaches all these. But later, sometime later, not the Vishnu Tattva, nor, you know, an ordinary scholar, I believe, I should be careful, but another, not Sri Krishna, not Vishnu Tattva. Then he also wrote on Samkhya, but he described it different. When Kapila, the original Kapila is describing Samkhya, it's always to find Krishna, right? The other Kapila wasn't speaking that way. So we read from the original Kapila in Srimad Bhagavatam. I hope that's okay.
I am coming from that holy place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have given visit. And they found one book, Krishna Karanamrut.
Oh, very beautiful.
I am from that place. And Radhana Swami Maharaj, Loknath Swami Maharaj and Chandramoli Maharaj have also given visit to that place. Mm-hmm. I am requesting you also come to that place.
I will come. Thank you so much. Thank you. Are there any other thoughts or questions? Question back in the corner. Microphone is coming. No, it's almost here.
I think it's not working.
Hey, Krishna.
Okay, I'll repeat the question. Following up on the question about the loving relationship between the gopas, can I speak a little bit about transcendental competition, how love affects competition on the transcendental platform? A competition. Could we speak about transcendental competition? Competitions that is not of this world, but transcendental. You see, this is important. Thank you for the question. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, again and again and again, many times, many places in the Bhagavad Gita, he speaks about something called sometimes he calls it antasukha. Sometimes he calls it atmarama. He uses different terms to describe the concept of happiness being something that is within us. It's our own nature. It's inside. But we tend to be out of touch with that. On the material platform, we're not realizing that happiness within. And so we become convinced, our mind becomes programmed, that our happiness is dependent on something external. There's something that I don't have right now that I need to get in order to be happy. Or there's something that I've got right now that's bringing me happiness, and if I lose it, my happiness will be lost with it. And because we're all feeling that, we're trying to gather those resources in this world that we think will make us happy, right? And there's limited resources in this world. So unless we come to the point where we realize my happiness is within, then we tend to fight over those resources. Even if there's plenty of resources, our fear is that there won't be enough. And our competition becomes very heated, and we have a lot of conflict in life, a lot of conflict in the world. Transcendental competition is an entirely different thing. Transcendental competition is, I'm so deeply absorbed in my love for Krishna that I'm not worried about getting anything external. I have a happiness and a joy within myself that nothing can take away from me. Time can't take it away from me. Another person can't take it away from me. Nobody's competing in such a way to take my happiness away. But transcendental competition is a more beautiful competition, where the competition is, since I'm entirely fulfilled in life, since there's nothing else that I need in life, I'm completely satisfied in just satisfying Krishna. And I'm going to do that to the best of my ability. And if I see someone else satisfying Krishna in a wonderful way, I'm going to appreciate that, and then I'm going to try to do even better. Right? So in this person's mind and heart, there's no fear. No fear that I need something external. We go back to the beginning class, their competition is entirely focused on Krishna. How can I please Krishna more than someone else? Let me try. Right? And there's no animosity towards the other. You know, there's actually pleasure and joy in the competition, rather than pain, conflict, fear, worry, anxiety due to the conflict. I hope that is okay. All right. We have another question. Yes. So happy to see you.
Hare Krishna.
I'm forgetting your initiated name now because I haven't been referring to you by it.
Ananda Manjari Devi Dasi. Ananda Manjari Devi.
Ananda Manjari, yeah.
Hare Krishna. Is this similar to Loka Prabhu's question? And I am thinking about how it's described in this pastime, how Krishna is sitting at the center and the gopas are sitting around him. And simultaneously it feels that he is alone with every single one of the gopas.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm curious about how does it feel in a way for the gopas to feel this one-on-one interaction and the individuality of this relationship with Krishna, and then simultaneously, is there a sense of being part of the group or like serving together?
And that's a beautiful question. You know, these are the questions that some deep Rasika Vaishnava should be answering, but I will do my best with it. The question was, it's mentioned with Krishna and the gopas, it's also mentioned with Krishna and the gopis, right, in the Rasa Lila, that There's so many gopis, there's one Krishna, but every gopi feels that Krishna is right there with them, right? I really appreciate you bringing this up because it goes so well, it connects so well with the previous question, right? If there was only one Krishna and he was limited, then we would have to be fighting for his attention, right? We'd have to be fighting for his time. You know, this is kind of what this is the difference between us and Krishna and why Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and we're not. Right? Because Krishna, that form of Krishna, it's called Akila Rasamrita Murti. With that one form, he can reciprocate with every mood of love. And he can do that unlimitedly with unlimited number of souls. So there's never there's not the problem that we have in this world. When we turn away from Krishna, Prabhupada was mentioning there that time, that in the spiritual world, with the where the cowherd boys are, there's not the problem of past, present, and future, right? Past, present, and future create limitations, right? Something was there in the past, and then whatever was there is limited, and then at a certain point, it's gone in the present or gone in the future, you know? That energy doesn't enter into Krishna's relationships with his pure devotees. Those relationships are free from all limitations. So even if there's thousands of gopis, hundreds of thousands of gopis, unlimited gopis, every one of them can feel like Krishna is right there with them. And so there's not the fear of this material world. There's not the disappointment of the material world. There's not the pain of the material world. You know, that's the problem with the world that we've chosen. We've chosen the artificial world, the reflected world, with all its limitations programmed into it. In those relationships, every one of them there's nothing lacking. Everything that I could possibly want, it's here. And there's nothing that could take it away. Hope that's okay.
I feel like I still am missing a part of the answer. And it's like, I'm curious also about it. Like when there is this relationship, very individual, are the gopis or gopas still able to see like Krishna has this flavor of relationship with someone else while he's having this flavor with me? Or is it just kind of very...
This should be obvious, right? Because in the morning, the cowherd boys, they gather at Krishna's home.
Yeah.
So that they can run out to the forest with him. And as Krishna is trying to leave, his mother just does not want him to go. And she's worried about him. Oh no, you're going barefoot. You should wear shoes. You know, I'm worried that somehow you'll hurt your soft lotus feet. And Krishna's saying, I don't need the shoes. Leave me alone, mom. I want to go out and play with my friends now. And she's like, okay. And then they're about to go and then she's running back and saying, hold it. Don't go yet. You know, I have something more. I have some more snacks for you to take out to the forest. Don't go yet. Here, take this. Okay, mom, thank you. Got the sweets. Everything's good. I'm ready to go. Thank you. I'll see you later. And he's running away. Hold it. Don't go yet. So it's obvious that Mother Yashoda has a love, and it's a different kind of love. It's the love of the mother. And it's obvious that the girls love Krishna, but they have a different love. It's, you know, it's the love of the girls. And it's all of these different beautiful relationships are there. They're manifest. They're out in the open. Everyone can see them. Everyone can feel that Krishna is reciprocating with everyone in so many different ways. But the way he reciprocates with me is just perfect. I couldn't want anything more. Okay. Thank you. Maybe we'll end with that. Thank you all so much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki. Yeah.